the main thing I say is that she has really touched my world. She's brought a message of hope to me that has changed my perspective, and I'm just very, very grateful. And if you can take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth, this is a hardcore woman. I love her. I'll give you Katie. Thank you.
Hi, y'all. I'm Katie Parker, grateful recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
Get my little world in order here. I love that introduction. I have been known to be called, my nickname is Scrappy. And my husband says sometimes I'm like taking a drink out of a fire hose, so if you feel that way, enjoy the ride. I've had the gift of sobriety since October the 28th of 1984. For that, I am very grateful, and I have a loving God. Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Today, I have a God that is so absolutely crazy about me. I had no idea I could have a relationship with somebody or something, or call it whatever you'd like, that I could go to and be okay in his presence by myself with my Creator. And never, ever have I experienced anything like that before. I have to diligently work at that, though. I can feel very alone if I'm not careful. And you'll hear in my story, I've been sober 26 years. A lot has happened in 26 years. It's very important that you understand that I have 5.5 months more than my husband. The reason that is so important is because in our home, every once in a while, I have to remind him it'll make more sense in about 5.5 months. But if when he's speaking tonight, you're not following, it's just because he's 5.5 months less than I am. So don't hold that against him. We have we're very passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous in our home, and we are both very passionate about AA. You know, first of all, let me tell you, I'd like to thank the committee for inviting us. We absolutely love doing this. It's an honor and a privilege, and I take this responsibility very seriously. I do believe I'm an agent of God. I believe that's what it's asked me in the third step, is that I stand here and I share the truth about alcoholism. Alcoholism is a disease that kills people who don't even have it. Alcoholism is an aggressive, progressive disease. And I take it very, very seriously. And I take AA very seriously. Now, don't get me wrong. I have a blast. I love the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. We laugh a lot. But when it comes down to telling the truth about alcoholism, I don't worry about hurting your feelings. I would rather step on your feelings than stand on your grave. And I have seen that a lot in these rooms. And I've seen these people take AA as if we were a self-help program. And we're not a self-help program. We're not for everybody. We are for alcoholics. And I think that's an important message to continue to push, and that's what Pam and I were talking about. If you're chairing a meeting and it's drifted off topic, it's the responsibility of the chairperson to bring it back on topic. If you sit in that chair, you've got quite a responsibility. And what happens sometimes is we miss that responsibility. And in these rooms, especially here, I have noticed that you guys are hardcore, so I love that. I know I'm not preaching to a group of people who are going to start rolling their eyes at me going, whatever. Is she gonna bring out of that big book? You bet I am. The big book has saved my life, and there was a lot of time in AA that was not the case for me. I want to thank my host. Pam has been fabulous. You know, please. She is on it. She was calling me, and she was emailing me, and if I didn't respond within an hour, it's like, I called you a little while ago. Where are you? And I'm like, you know, okay, I got 3 more talks before this one. I'm coming to you. I swear I'm getting back with you. But the thing that was so cute was she sent her mother to come pick us up. When has that ever happened, right? I mean, you might send your kids in the program, but you sending your mother to come get you was pretty cool. And her mom, Judy, are you here, Judy? There she is. She's got a year sober. And I said, so how many people are in Mobile? Yes. I said, how many people are in Mobile? And she goes, I don't know. And I said, well, how long have you lived here? She goes, all my life. She said, but I am only a year sober, so more will be revealed. And something that Pam did that, you know, for some of us that have had the opportunity to travel around and speak at a lot of these things, you get a hostess, or, and it's very cool experience, but I have never had anyone pack a picnic lunch and have it in the car at the airport. That was pretty darn special. I mean, we woofed that food down. It was like, I love this girl. I love her. And we've had the opportunity to visit, and we're like-minded. We're like-minded in this program. I am so much about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so much about saving drunks. And I love it. And I'm also a strong woman in AA. And yes, there are strong women in AA. So let me just knock that one. I hear one more statement that there are not enough strong women, especially spoken from a man. I'm going to have to shoot you. And this means when here comes the fire hose. When that arm gets right like that and that body starts going, I'm all about it. I thoroughly enjoyed Ralph, his deal. I would have drank with Ralph. I'd have drank with Ralph and with Carl and with Don. And then we would all call Gail to come pick us up, you know, see that. That's how that deal works out. And she'd have come pick us up. I could tell you that. But I have enjoyed everybody. I love the way Carl so eloquently put the steps together. And I've loved everybody. Bubba, I've loved everybody's talk. And I get so much out of it. I never, ever want to be the one who sits here and just comes and flies in to do my pitch and then goes. I like to sit in these things. I like to get to know you guys. I like what happens in between the speakers. I'm all about being a part of the fellowship and talking, because to me, that's where the real magic of this deal is. And I'm so grateful to be a part of it. The book does ask me to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I've always believed that's what I'm like without God. That's what I'm like in active alcoholism. And, you know, my disease started long before I took the drink. I share a little bit about my life as a child, because that's where my formative years were in understanding how to behave in the world. Didn't really grow very far from that, most of us. Yeah, I mean, you can upset me, and I can look like I'm 12 years old in a heartbeat. I don't know about you guys, but I can embarrass all of us in no time. You know what I mean? Drunk or sober. And then I share just a little bit about my drinking. I can qualify myself quickly. I do like to let everybody know that as a woman, my incomprehensible demoralization makes me uncomfortable to share it from a podium. So out of respect, I hope you understand that my drunkalogue will be quite short. But I like to share about my 26 years in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where the real magic is, and that's where I've learned to grow up. And, you know, you take me, you separate me from alcohol, and I got trouble. I got trouble if I don't have a spiritual program. Pearl, are you feeling okay? Okay, you had us all worried there, Missy. Yeah. By golly. They said everything's okay?
Yeah, they said I
had a binder to stand. Okay, well, I want somebody. If we could have a doctor sit next to her, I'd feel a little bit better. Oh, boy. Well, doggone it. Well, you know, I was 26 years old when I got sober, but I'm 53 years old today. I have a 32-year-old daughter. I've got a 22-year-old son. I've got a 4-year-old grandson. Which is, God's do-over. I'm telling you, grandchildren are God's do-over for us drunks. You know what I mean? We get to do it and be present, and I love it. And I have another granddaughter due Tuesday and another grandson due in 30 days. So at the end of July, we'll have 3 grandchildren. And that to me just blows me away. You know, I mean, I don't take sobriety at all. Day by day, I mean, pinch me. I can't believe this is happening to me. I can't believe I have the life that I have today. I am so fortunate. I was a kid that was absolutely driven. Absolutely driven. I came into this world never feeling like I fit in. And so what did I do? I was the class clown. I overreacted. I did everything. I made everybody crazy. I was an absolute pain in the ass. Can you see it all over me? Absolutely. And either you were a pain in the ass or you've raised a pain in the ass. But everybody has an idea of what that looks like. And I was it in a bag of chips. I never felt like I fit in, so I overachieved to fit in. And you know, guys, I look at that, and that didn't make me alcoholic. Remember, I've suffered from alcoholism for a long, long time. By the time I found the drink, that was the solution. I finally found something that would calm the beast of this level of self-absorption. Me, 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 what about me, what about me? I remember my stepsister being in the hospital, and I looked at my stepmother. I go, does this mean we don't have to go to school? It's like, there's no concern for my stepsister being in the hospital. It's like, what about me? I mean, it was all over me. Of course, I didn't get that. And, you know, I'm the youngest of three, which always means you're tortured. You know, if you're the youngest, you know what that looks like. And, but my mother died when I was eight, and that was very, very unexpected. She died of a kidney disease, but my father remarried three times in an 18-month period. And we had live-in housekeepers. So if you'd have told me when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous what made me alcoholic, it was that tragedy made me alcoholic. It absolutely did. See, I did not understand that I had an allergy that manifested in the phenomenon of craving, which who talks like that? You know. You don't go into the bar and go, hey, Joe, man, I've had this malady on me all day. It's triggered the obsession, and I know once I take that shot of tequila, it's going to manifest in that phenomenon of craving, but I'm doing it anyway. Bring it on. All I knew is I got to have a drink. I got to have a drink. And I always thought I changed my mind. See, when I was drinking, I always thought I changed my mind. I had no idea I'd triggered an allergy, an itch that I couldn't scratch. I'm just going to have another one. I got enough time to have another one. Yeah, yeah, okay. I'll get there. And then before you know it, I'd overshoot the mark. Always overshooting the mark. Always. I have extensive experience with outside issues. Extensive. I was not a blackout drinker. I was a brownout drinker. And one of the reasons I was not going to be a blackout drinker was the fact that I was a woman. I drank a lot by myself. I went into a lot of places by myself, and I was not going to be that vulnerable. But so my mother passes away, my dad remarries 8 million times, and it seemed to me that I came up with a lot of ideas of how life was, and I really didn't like it. I didn't like school, unlike everyone that's been up here. It's been interesting that everyone that's been up here has mentioned something about their education. Either they cheated themselves, their alcoholism cheated them out of an education, or they put their nose to the grindstone. That was not my experience. I did not like school, still don't like school, 53 years old. And here's the deal. If you cheated yourself, if alcoholism cheated you out of an education and you go back to school, I am so impressed with that. However, I do want to tell you that there are some of us sitting in the room that absolutely did not dig education and still don't dig education. And that's okay too. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's okay. So I'm letting you guys off the hook, because the truth of the matter is I'm telling you, if you sit down and we start talking about foreign affairs or anything, I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. You know, I have got no interest in history. I was actually, when we flew in, I saw that Alabama was on the coastline. Did not know that. Looked out the window, went, oh, we must be closer to the water than I thought we were. I thought we were a little farther inland. And geographically speaking, I don't know where anything is. I don't know where Venezuela is. I really don't care where Egypt is. I do enjoy me. And anything that affects me and in my lifetime, I'm actually interested. If it's in my zip code, I'm interested in it. You see what I'm saying? But at the same time, it actually is okay. And now keep in mind, I managed to get through school, and that was absolutely amazing. I got through school, and I was determined to get the diploma. But I did not get an education. I can read, but I can't comprehend. I can't spell well, and there's a lot of things I can't do. So I am self-employed. That's a very important thing to know. I am self-employed, and I am a very successful businesswoman, and because I am self-employed. I'm also a chameleon. What alcoholic is not? I walk into a room, and I figure out who I need to be and how I need to be. And I can win the confidence, really, of just about anybody. And so one of the things, though, I sponsor this little gal. We call ourselves Dumb and Dumber. She is, this guy from Norway came in, and she says, is he Norwegian? And I said, silly, he's from Norwegia. And I swear, the people were standing there, and they're just looking at us going, nothing. Alrighty. But, you know, I'll tell you, I did, and you know, I thought the Statue of Liberty was a man till 1986. We won't even go there. But, you know, guys, one of the things about that is, I had to do some serious soul searching as to, am I okay without an education? See, this is what my point is about. It's not if you have an education or if you don't. How many of us chase things thinking it'll fix us? That's what's going to be. So if you got cheated and you know you need that, that's what I'm saying. I've had people come out and go, well, I know how you feel about education. It's like, oh, no, I want my kids to get an education. I pushed my kids to college. For me, I am okay with or without education. I'm telling you what, you know, when that whole thing about Egypt was on the news, I was just ready to click the channel. I'm like, whatever is happening over there. They're all mad at each other. But that wiener thing got me intrigued. Now, I was intrigued with wiener, and then I was ready for wiener to go. You know what I mean? And no one has ripped on his name, have they? I mean, come on. Come, wiener. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, well, here, let's fast forward. So I am an absolute pain in the neck. I am a train wreck. I start drinking at about 11 years old. I find that alcohol is my solution. I have the same experience everybody else does. After I took that first depth charge, as we called it, I felt like I was at home. I still love the burn. I love everything about booze. I love it. My family was all about drinking. There was cocktails every evening hour. My dad was an ex-professional football player. He was just an amazing man, and there was lots of alcohol in our home, so booze was always equal fun for me. But when you're a kid my age trying to get booze, I love, somebody would mention this earlier, we used to have to sit in front of the 7-Eleven to get booze, right? Because you could only drink so much of your parents' booze and then you were going to get caught. And so you got a ton of outside issues, right? They were really easy to get. You know, any of that stuff was a cakewalk. I grew up in Houston, Texas. And so we'd sit in front of the 7-Eleven and you had to wait for that creepy guy, if you guys know what I'm talking about. And I swear, women are the first, they always go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So we wait for creepy guy to pull up and then you say, hey, can you buy us some booze? And creepy guy goes, oh yeah. Yeah. Now keep in mind, we're like 13, 14 years old. Thank you very much. See how good she is to me? She's coming home with us, honey. And so, creepy guy pulls up to the 7-Eleven and we get him to get the booze, and the toughest thing was to get rid of creepy guy. Creepy guy was not easy to shake, right? And, creepy guy is sitting in these rooms too, so don't think you're fooling me. Oh yeah, oh yeah. That creepy guy is coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I'm assuming creepy guy must have been around 28 to 35 years old. And see, keep in mind, we were about 14. And he was the guy that would buy you the booze, but he wanted to hang with you too. Yeah. Need we say more? Creepy guy has to do a little bit more step work in here, yes? Now, guys, keep in mind, too, that a lot of this did not, all of my childhood did not make me an alcoholic. What made me an alcoholic is I have an allergy and obsession. It talks about it in the doctor's opinion. It explains what makes me alcoholic. It's very important that I understand the disease of alcoholism. Because when I came in here, I'd have swore to God that if you had my life, you'd have drank too. If your mother died when you were 8 years old, you'd have drank too. If you'd have had to gone through all those mothers like I did, you would have drank too. And what I understood is that alcohol was the solution. It was the only thing that calmed the beast inside of me. And so my drinking got totally out of hand. I had a small child. I drugged this child through places she had absolutely no business being drugged through. I moved up to Austin when I was 17 years old. I had this daughter when I was 21. And I remember I didn't get sober till I was 26. And I don't know about you, but if you got kids around, you're drinking, it's a lot of work. It's a real problem. You know, they like to get up early. That's a problem. They like to get up early. They like to eat. Yeah, that's another problem. They need some sort of schedule. That ain't happening, right? That ain't happening. And so this little girl saw a lot of things, and thank God today that we've worked out a lot through Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the part of this program that I am so proud of, and that I can stand proud as a parent and say, look at my children. And they have not been anything less than, my youngest has been a serious problem who has turned his life around, and my daughter is just an absolute untreated Al-Anon and a worry wart. And I mean worries to the point that it's sad. You know what I mean? And yet I love them to death and I do the best I can with them, but they're not these wonderful children who are going out there facing life and doing great. I see alcoholism. I see alcoholism in my family and I pray for them all the time. I love my children to death. I'd give my life for my children, but I also understand. And my son has never seen me drink ever. And he clearly looks like he might have the bug. Never seen me drink. My daughter, who had seen me drink up until she was 5, she worries to death about everything. And she's done the Al-Anon program a little, but not enough. And so she's trying several other things. And I talked to her, and that's one of the things that Pam and I were talking about, is how do you handle your children? You know, you don't get to keep coming at them with all the answers. They're kind of done with listening to us telling them the answer. You know, so the best thing I can do is pray. And I pray like crazy, man. I do all kinds of fun prayers, you know. God and I, our relationship, I swear, is like he and I sitting there talking. I love what you said, Gail, when you heard him loud and clear, you know, laugh. I have that relationship with my Creator. I hear him loud and clear say, back off, step on the pedal, say nothing. He says, say nothing a lot. Well, so my drinking gets totally out of hand, right? Totally out of hand. I never get in trouble with the law. I seem to be able to smell the cops when they're coming. I don't know what I had there. I'm sure that would have run out. But for a while there, I could feel like the cops were coming to bust whatever we were doing. I didn't tell anybody, man. I just flew out the window. And then I'd watch the cops come in and bust everybody. And I'd just think I was so intuitive. I was so smart. And, oh, it was amazing. You know, when you look back, I love looking back at my life. It's amazing. But I end up, I had this whole deal about women. I love women. I've always loved women. I've never felt that women were a threat. I find it very sad when we say, when women come in here and say, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I hated women. And I thought, well, we women are not doing our jobs. Because it's our responsibility. It's not you boys' responsibility. It's our responsibility to step up to those women. And when we see them really adding that whole, you know, puckered up chest and I don't need a woman and I'm over here talking to these 9 guys, it's my job to try to bring her to me. And I do that all the time. I walk up to women all the time, introduce myself, sit there and talk to them. How long you been sober? That's what we have to do. And I have a little pet peeve that I'm gonna deviate, if you will, for a moment. This whole deal about predators and Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I don't believe there are predators. I don't believe the boys are predators. I think there's some sick men in this room, don't get me wrong. But I don't believe that the males are the predators. I think the women are the predators. And I think we always have been. And we know what we're doing. We absolutely know what we're doing. And my husband says something, and I hope I can say it right. We chase you, meaning the boys. You chase us till we catch you. Did I get that right? Okay. So here's the deal. When you boys, when a woman comes up to you and says some man is making a move on her, you send her to a woman. And you let her and that woman deal with that boy. Okay? Because the truth of the matter is, we're the ones that have been out there drinking. We are female alcoholics. We know the power we got. And what we're doing is we're convincing you to think it's you. And we're getting you to stand there with your shield and your sword. Where's that guy? I'll go get him. I'll take care of him. I watched him kick one guy out of my home group that I'd gone to. Said he was a predator. He was harmless. Absolutely harmless. I mean, was he sick? Oh, yeah. But he was harmless. And that's the part, man. We are here. We are not here about that. It says it on page 69, I'm not to be the arbiter of your sex life. We women can handle ourselves, right, girls? Let's let those boys hear that. Yes, we can. We can handle ourselves. And so, and I loved what Don said about that woman who said, don't you touch my girls. I swear, I had a little gal at our meeting come up to Charlie and say some guy was hitting on her. And I looked at Charlie, I said, she needs to come to me. I'll take care of that nonsense. I'll march my butt right over there. You know what I mean? Of course, that little girl got up to get coffee about 20 times like this. Oh, yeah, she's shaking it up. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, do not lose sight. Hold on 1 second here. Okay, so that is my little pet peeve. Now, my husband has about two or three, so he'll go off on several tangents, but that one was one I like to get out there. And I got some man up in Canada who did not like me saying that because he was the gallant knight in shining armor that saved all the young girls. But that's just my observation of women in Alcoholics Anonymous is we have a tendency to say there's not enough strong women. And it's like, okay, well, then if you guys are going to take a woman through the steps, she should be a strong woman by now. Yes? So send her out there to do the bidding, period. And so that's why I'm a big fan of that. I am a strong woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I like to call BS when I see BS. We are strong. We are women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are strong. I come into AA, and you'll see it. Tina Turner was my hero. I mean, if that talks about a strong woman. And I came in, remember, October the 28th, and it was Halloween weekend, and I was dressed as Tina Turner the night before I got sober. So by the next morning, I still had a little remnants of looking like Tina Turner. Okay, I still had the gold hair. I had changed my outfit, but when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was chasing a boy, if that's any indication of some insane thinking. At the time, I heard he was sober. I didn't know what that meant. I chased him through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that is a bad plan. Bad, bad plan. But I got in here that way, and I looked around the rooms, and I thought, oh, my God. Who are these people? You don't look like the people I thought you were going to look like. And what ended up happening was when I got in here, they said, is anybody new? And I kid you not, this is what the room did. Me? That's how delusional I am. I had no idea. I was, you know, I hadn't washed my face. The makeup wasn't off. The hair was bent to one side. You know what I mean? But I absolutely fell in love with the people in AA. Oh, my God, I loved the laughter. I hadn't laughed in so long. See, booze quit working a long time ago. Long time ago. And I hadn't laughed in so long, and I had about four or five women just surround me. 1984, they surrounded me, and I loved women. And so they just took care of me. They called me. They came by to get me. They, you know, what do you need? It wasn't about me, you know, giving me their phone number and expecting me to call them. I don't get that. I take your number. I'm calling you. I'm not expecting you to call me. People say, well, I guess they're not ready. What the heck does that mean? Showed up at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. What do you think? I wasn't at the PTA, you know? I mean, I'm ready. I'm just scared to death. And these girls called me like crazy, man. They took me under their wing. And here's what happened. I happen to be one of the lucky ones because I love AA. And now I'm going to fast forward into my sobriety. I ended up, guys, falling in love with this program like you wouldn't believe. I fell in love with that man. He had 6 years sober. I had 10 minutes. Thank God it says in the book that nobody is to be the arbiter of our sex life. Because if anybody had told him to stay away from me, we would never have spent 20 years together. I had an amazing life with my husband of 20 years. Absolutely amazing. I love that man with all my heart. And what ends up happening in this program is, who am I to say what you should and shouldn't do? That's not my job. My job is to get you in touch with the power that will answer that question. You don't want me running your life. You don't want me as your life coach. I don't know what job you should get. I don't know what guy you should date. Now, if all of a sudden you keep sleeping with everybody in AA and it's causing you a problem, you can't stay sober, we're going to talk about that. Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'll ask you, can you please keep your pants on? You know, that's all I want. And you know, it's funny because, you know, the women laugh about that, but the men seem to look at the ground on that one. But it can be a problem. We got a few pages in the book that talk about it being a problem. It's a problem. You take away booze, I got to fill it, right? We can go to anything. We can have more children. We can do whatever we can do to fix that hole inside of us. And so I get actively involved in AA. Man, I am all about service. I had the Zippo lighter that Ralph talked about. I loved it. I gave it to that teenage boy of mine, and he lost it. Damn it. And he's not a teenager anymore, but so I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I was all about the book. Joe and Charlie were really big back then. It was all about coming alive with these steps. And the part that I had no idea, guys, I literally started living a life based on alcohol being the problem. I did not know that the problem was page 60 to 63. And I always tell people, if you don't know what's on page 60 to 63 of our big book, you do need to go read it. You need to not only go read it, you need to tell somebody that you didn't know what was the root of our problem. And so I thought the problem in me was drinking. And I remembered sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous saying to myself, I am so sorry you folks got that problem with that selfishness. You know, I really did. I was most likable in high school. I'm really most likable in AA. If we did have that survey to put out, I think I'd be voted the number one AA member that everybody liked. And I really got it from here. And I really, really believe that. I did an inventory with a girl who did the best she could. She had good intentions, but it was not about self. It was about management. It really, really was about management. I think people in AA, we all have good intentions. I have been that person that really, really, if you came to me, I did the best I could, but I wasn't coming out of the book. I was coming more from a therapeutic standpoint. I'd done a ton of therapy when I got sober. I did all the codependency, the family of origin work. That was really big in the 80s. I didn't know any better. I didn't have any idea. You see, we come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and whatever we hear in here, we believe it's the truth. That's why it's so important that we stand up for our traditions, that we stand up if somebody starts bringing in some of that nonsense from treatment, that we sit around and talk therapy and there's too much pool, the pool boy put too much chlorine in my pool. You know what I mean? And there's a good way to handle that. You don't need to do it out loud in the meeting and shame the pants off of them, right? The book says we grow in understanding and effectiveness. There's a good way to do it where you pull them aside or you go talk to their sponsor. Right? I love that. That's always been mine. Well, so I end up getting these gifts, guys. I mean, amazing gifts in AA. My business is taking off. I'm 15th in the world in the fitness business. I am booming. I really am booming. We have another baby. And my husband says to me, I'm 3 years sober. He is 6 years ahead of me. So he's 9 years now. And he says, hey, let's go back to church. And I remembered thinking, that line in the book that says, for if an alcoholic failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And I really thought there was a period there because, see, the text is spiritual literature. It goes deeper and deeper the more you study it. I've heard people say it's the beginning program. Mm-mm. It goes deeper and deeper. Don't set that book on the shelf. The 12 and 12 is a good piece of literature, but it stands sometimes in the way of the great. The great is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I am a firm believer in saying that because I've done it. I've done it both sides. I've done everything you can do in AA wrong. And I said to God, so you want me? See, they all like me, God. You want me to be the one telling them that? They all start going, not really liking her anymore. And now, like I said, this crowd is very like-minded. That's not always the case. It's always, as a matter of fact, the crowd that I used to come from, what I call the middle of the road crowd, they don't really care for the message that I'm bringing. And I have to just stand here and say, okay, I ask you, God, to help me grow in understanding and effectiveness. I'm not saying I'm doing it right and you're doing it wrong. Oh my gosh, no, I'm not. But from my experience, if you can gain anything out of that, please do. And so, Joe and I go to church. Now, what I don't realize is, see, alcohol was my problem. I'm working a program based on alcohol being my problem. I take care of my other stuff through counseling, through family of origin, through codependency, and I do all of that stuff. And I realize that, you know what, thank you guys so much for giving me my life back. Thank you so much for rocketing me into the fourth dimension by taking away the obsession to drink. I thought that meant I was rocketed into the fourth dimension. I had such a delusion behind that. Remember, our disease is a disease of delusion, not denial. Delusion. And so Joe says, let's go to church. And I thought, church, I was raised Catholic, you know. I mean, the guy was up there speaking some sort of Latin like this. And I was like, turn around, dude. Man, let me at least see you. You know, I mean, nothing. You got the back of his head and he speaks a foreign language. I just, all I wanted to do is flick a booger on my sister. You know what I mean? And Joe said, let's go back to church. I thought, church? Oh, man, okay, whatever. So we go to this church. It's non-denominational. Oh, my God. I'd never been to anything like it. They got the music up on an overhead projector, and you know, we're doing this, and I am feeling the spirit, and the next thing you know, and I know I'm in the South, I got to tell you, I found Jesus. Oh, my God, did I find Jesus. I mean, I was like, woo! And I thought, oh, my God, I got to go tell all my AA friends about Jesus. And they did not really want to hear about Jesus. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Now, what ended up happening? Now, keep in mind that we, you know, we can pray and meditate ourselves right out of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, yes? You could do it with Buddha or what, Tupac, Oprah, or whoever you pick. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, it is to be done in conjunction with. Right? If you choose a spiritual path that takes you out, the book tells us, please do, but don't, AA is number one. Right? Our primary purpose. Yes, we're to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God knows about us, but God Almighty, don't step away from those 12 steps because you won't be able to fit yourself. Trust me. And so what Joe and I did is we just bailed on AA. Nobody wanted anything to do with us. We went over there. There was a thing called Lion Tamers, which was bringing the 12 steps into the church, where Jesus Christ was in the 12 steps. Oh, God, I can't tell you how sick it got. It got very sick. And we got so crazy behind Jesus that we have a picture of us that we look Amish. Because I learned that we alcoholics are chameleons. We blend, right? We blend right until we don't blend anymore. And it's like putting the finger in the dike until the dam breaks. And so what ended up happening is we stayed in the church for 3 years. We stepped away from AA. Oh, yeah, we absolutely stepped away from AA. Thank God we didn't drink, but I'm sitting at an intersection. The law had passed that you could take a right on red. Now, to most people, that's no big deal, but to me, it was a memorable moment in my life. I'm sitting in that intersection, and this old woman is not taking a right on red. And I'm thinking, I mean, I was like, and I thought, old lady, I'm pushing you in the middle of this intersection, man. I am going at it. And it's all in the name of Jesus. Come on. Oh, my God. Thank God I didn't. I get home. I tell my husband. I said, I am not doing well. And he said, honey, I'm not doing well either. I said, well, man, what are we going to do? And he goes, we need to go back to AA. I said, let's go. We picked up. We were both self-employed. We picked up. We went right to the meeting house that we'd been going to. And there was Ed H., you know, doing the 10th step thing he does, and all these people in the room. And I leaned over to Joe, and I said, you know, honey, we're home. We're home. I'm back with my people. And I'd love to say, you guys, from that point on, my life was fabulous. But a huge problem happened then. And I believe God sends us life rafts after life raft after life raft, no matter how far down we go. If you're sitting in these rooms and you cannot get sober, He never, ever gives up on you, ever. He will send you a life raft after life raft after life raft. The only problem is you're asleep. You cannot see it. You're so consumed with self-centeredness. You absolutely cannot see those life rafts. And I didn't see that this was a life raft that God had sent me, and I didn't get in it. I stayed right by the side of it. And so what did Joe and I do from that point on? We did what I call middle-of-the-road AA. Book talks about it. Uses the terminology in our book. I did meeting-based sobriety. I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, couldn't have told you where my big book was, did not get a sponsor, and sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got the relief, but never the freedom. And that is so dangerous. It happens every day in our fellowship. Those steps are to be used every day. They're to be kept on your pulse on self-centeredness. Just like a diabetic keeps his pulse, I mean, a diabetic keeps his blood sugar levels checked 3 times a day, the book tells us I got to do that with my level of self-centeredness. I don't get to check it once a week. See, it's what I didn't realize is Joe and I are tooling along, so now we're in AA, yeah, right? We're back. We're riding that wave. We got that relief. We got what we needed. And the next thing you know, we're 10 years doing this. I knew where my big book was. We were big book people, guys. How can you walk away from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and not even know that the solution is sitting there? It kind of reminds me of that third world country where they won't eat the oxen and they're all starving. You know, it feels the same way. You know what I mean? The solution is sitting there, and I am so asleep. My buddy Mark Houston used to say, you know, we're asleep, dreaming, we're awake. And I was so asleep. That's what the awakening talks about. So I got these notes. I love notes. You know, some people aren't big fans of notes. I'm a big fan. A lot happens in life, and I am clearly getting older. So I'm a big fan of notes. I love what it says about the middle of the road solution. It says on page 25, because, you know, people refer to AA being, if you're middle of the road AA, it's some of these we balked, half measures availed us nothing. Oh my God. I mean, it's everywhere in our book. So why, when we address it, does it seem to get shunned? I don't know. But it's warning after warning after warning, and I didn't see it. It says, page 25, if you were as seriously alcoholic as we believe there is no middle of the road solution. That means I'm not working the steps all the time. I've seen it happen even in service. I've seen people just throw themselves into service and never work the 12 steps. I've seen people do it in meeting-based sobriety. I've seen it. I've done it all. I mean, like I said, when I say I see it, it's because I've done it. That's why I'm awakened to see it. It says, we were in a position where life is becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation, sober or drunk, as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. How many people are sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous stark raving sober? Oh, yeah, we have people. Some people take their lives, and that's just heartbreaking. But you know what happens that breaks my heart more than anything is we're sitting in AA, and we don't know that we've got the malady all over us. We have no idea we're living in the bedevilments, right? Here's the bedevilments. Listen to this one. Page 52. And they are available in sobriety. They're what I was in for 10 years. It's called untreated alcoholism, right? We have a disease that has treatment. The treatment is spiritual. If I'm not doing it, I'm only getting the fellowship. That's only one side of that triangle. I'm not getting it. And the bedevilments where we were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to others. It sounds like that person needs an antidepressant, is what that sounds like. See, and we got to be very careful. Because untreated alcoholism, we'll get an antidepressant, and I'm not saying who should and who shouldn't. Oh, my God, there's definitely people in here who need them, but we all don't need them. And I believe that what will happen is based on my experience when I'm sitting in untreated alcoholism, I am absolutely having these problems. I go to my doctor. What does he tell me? You need an antidepressant. I said, I had 3 panic attacks, 3 breathe-in-the-bag panic attacks in untreated alcoholism. Oh, it'll manifest. And I can take a pill, or I could go to spiritual principles, spiritual program, and work a program that can bring me out of that. See, what I would do, guys, is I would do God's will like a baton race. It's like I'd give it to God, and he wasn't doing it quick enough. Give it back, give it back. Come on, yo, I got it here, buddy. I got it. I'd take it back till I kind of wrecked that bus, and then I'd hand him back the baton. I'm getting in a little trouble here. It's getting a little hot, a little heated. So it was like a relay race. And what ends up happening is that I'm absolutely insane. I became a slogan slinger, right? Have you ever been driven by 100 forms of fear, knee deep in the bedevilments, and somebody says, well, you just need to turn it over? Oh my God, do you just want to slap them? Yeah, you look at them, you go, are you kidding? Are you serious? Turn it over? Is that the answer? Really? No, that's the promise. See, it's the steps you got to do. It's like somebody saying acceptance is the key to all my problems. You just want to knock them in the head. You go, acceptance, guys, is the promise. So you're asking me to work the promises, hoping the steps come true. It doesn't work that way. Don't come at me with the slogan. Come at me with the steps. That will give me relief for the meantime. Until I'm out ready to push your car in the middle of an intersection. See, when I snap, it's not pretty. See, I get restless, irritable, and discontent if you take me away from booze long enough and you don't give me those steps. Those steps are the inventory process is not a solitary self-appraisal. If I'm grading my own papers, I'm making nothing less than a B. Are you with me on that? Oh, yeah. But if I got about 10 people who knew you, they'd say, she's a pain in the neck. She argues with everybody. She's so self-centered, we can hardly tolerate her. See, and so I got to fast forward here. And so what I always tell people is when somebody's sitting in an AA meeting and they're hurting bad, I don't throw a slogan at them today. I don't say acceptance is the key. I'm doing them a disservice. I say, what step are you on? Have you got a sponsor? Let's go outside. Let's get the book. Let's sit down and talk about the book. Let me point out 60 to 63 to you. Let me show you where your troubles are of your own making. Let me show you what self looks like. Let me show you how it manifests. Let me show you what you do. And all of a sudden, you know what I get? I get relief. I go, so you're telling me that I started all this? Yes, you did. Yeah, you did. You made a decision based on self, which later placed you in a position to be hurt. See, selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of my problem. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. When it says I'm driven, I'm not choosing to act this way. I'm driven by these 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. You bet I step on the toes of my fellows, and you know what they do? They retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me. Call them too. Seeming without provocation, but invariably I find that sometime in the past I've made a decision based on self, which later placed me in a position to be harmed. Call them four. See, but if I don't do that pen to paper, I don't ever see it. I take my motive, I run it through my delusion. We got utopia, man. Everybody should be happy. Come on! Why is everybody mad at me? Look what I've done. Because I'm a doer. Aren't you doers? Oh, yeah. See, you know, and I love the line in the book that says, angry, indignant, and self-pity. See, to me, I go from self-righteous to self-pity. It's like a ping, a ping, a ping, a ping. I'm either, oh, I can't believe everybody's treated me for all I've done for them. Don't they see? Especially in AA. Can't you do that in AA? Look what I've done for this meeting. Nobody appreciates anything. I'm the one who does everything here. At home, same thing. At work, same thing. You can give an alcoholic a $200,000 a year job. He'll be bitching in about 45 days. Not being treated right. Not being treated right. It says the alcoholic, the ego of the alcoholic rebuilds at an astonishing rate. Didn't say rebuilds. Astonishing. Don't you love that? It says that we are an extreme example of self-will run riot, comma, though we usually don't think so. What? Sober? Yes, sober. Extreme example. And here's the deal, guys. If you put us in a fence, right, you just take somebody that you know that is self-will run riot. Everybody knows that person. Stick them in a fence. And then all of a sudden you're going to pluck out the extreme examples. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's us. And if you don't think you are, the book tells you, though you don't think so. See, it tells me right there, I can't even tell my own. We don't even think we belong in the fence. And here's the thing. Am I placed in a position of neutrality? Am I safe and protected? Can I actually match calamity with serenity? Is my thought life placed on a higher plane? Yes, but not all the time. And do I have to keep my pulse on it? You betcha. You betcha. Do I stay closely connected with my sponsor? Yes. Remember the line I told you, for if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work, that's the steps, and self-sacrifice for others, that's the 12th step, or service, he cannot handle certain trials and low spots ahead. Well, here comes my story that really it spins terribly out of control. And what ended up happening is my husband got very, very sick. And we couldn't figure out what was going on. All I knew is that he was not doing well. He had something going on in his head. And I thought it was depression, right? And so the psychiatrist that he was going to said, I think it's organic. Well, come on, you tell an old dope fiend like me organic. I'm thinking, pot? Remember, I'm not very well educated. Matter of fact, when they handed me the big book, I thought, a book? Come on, I know I'm sitting in a room full of people who have very little education. You know, it's okay. And so they said, organic. I said, what does that mean? He says, we think something's growing in his brain. He's going to have some extensive tests run. We were both self-employed. So what we had was catastrophic insurance. That doesn't cover anything. Any of y'all that have that know what I'm talking about. Well, that'll scare you. You think that's driven by 100 forms of fear? Oh, yeah. It scared me to death. I remember going to the meeting. I went to this meeting that it was called the Desire to Stop group, but I swear to God, it could have been called In Constant Collision with Somebody or something. It really could have. Because all we did was bitch. We actually prided ourselves on bitching. Because see, if you're not going to work an AA program, you need to try to find the sickest group you can and become a member of it. Because otherwise, people are going to try to come at you with the solution, and that's not very good. As a matter of fact, you really don't like them much. And so I'm in this sick group where you bring the problem, and everybody's going to try to figure out how to fix it, because that's what we do. We're kind of life coachy, you know what I mean? And so I told him, I said, oh, my God, and this girl comes up to me and says, you know what you can do, Katie? I've got my fitness business. I make good money, but I don't make enough money to pay for medical bills. Are you with me on that? I mean, who makes that kind of money? You could run up $200,000 in a week. And so I said, she says, you know what you ought to do, Katie? You ought to drive a school bus. Oh, my God. She says, you'll have instant insurance, just like those school teachers have. HMO, just like that. I went, oh, my God. That's what I'm going to do. So I go down there. I apply for the bus job. Now, keep in mind, it's in an affluent neighborhood. You know what I mean? They weren't sending me into the roughest parts of town. They're sending me into, I'm in an affluent neighborhood. And I go in there, and I get hired right away. And I don't realize that I am in over my head. How many of y'all know that? See, when I'm running on self-will, this is what happens to me. I'm in over my head. This was a bad idea. Those statements right there is what self-will looks like. And so I get on this bus, and I'm driving this bus, and I'm thinking, okay, come on, honey, let's go down. Let's take that test. Let's figure out what's wrong with you. Get me off this damn bus. See, I have no concern for the school district and how much money they've spent for me. Do you see the level of self-centeredness? When you scare me or threaten me, oh, I will do whatever I have to do. If I'm going to have to lie, I'm lying. See, none of us are above flat-out, bold-faced lying. You scare or threaten me, big fat lie shoots right out of my mouth. That's just what I do. And I'm a fairly transparent individual. Do you see the fire hose in me coming out? And so what ends up happening, I get down, I get on that bus, and my day one on that bus, I'm at the middle school, and these two boys get in a fight. Blood is flying everywhere, and they're making kids way bigger than they were when we were younger. And I mean, these boys are fighting like crazy. I'm getting in the middle of it. God Almighty! You know, and I am a spitfire. I got both those boys by the shirt cuff, and I'm walking them to the principal's office. We hadn't even gotten off the bus grounds, and this bus driver drives by, and he goes, did you get the key? I'm like, no! And he goes, go get the key. And I thought, oh, great, all I need is the kids driving the bus off when I'm hauling these two in. And so I run back, I get the key, and I look at those kids, and I do this number. I'm like, I swear to God, what are you getting? I swear to God, kill it. And I mean, I am out of my mind. Keep in mind, I have done this job just to get my husband the medical insurance. I am on complete self-will. I hadn't touched a step in 10 years. Got it? Are you with me? Stark, raving, sober. So I take them to the assistant principal. You know, I can't even believe it. I come back out in that bus. I swear to God, they were jumping from one seat to another. They literally had it rocking like this. And I came, oh, this is bad, man. What have I done? So it's like, bad idea. Bad idea. I get on that bus. I'm like, son of a, sit up! Swear to God, sit down, run. And then, you know, you're driving a bus. You got to look up. Everything's in the mirror. The children of the corn are back there. You know what I mean? Ain't nobody seven. My son would tell me, he goes, Mom, everybody thinks you're crazy. I am crazy. And I swear to God, I am such a pistol. And it was an affluent neighborhood. So, see, you bothered me anyway because you had money, right? Are you ready? Are you with me in the envy part? You know, envy, jealousy, the seven sins, whatever you want to call it. I didn't like you. So I'm sitting there in this BMW. It keeps you're on the same schedule with people. And this BMW keeps giving me grief. He always wants to get past me. Well, you can't pass a school bus. So I'd just kick out that stop sign, and I'd look at him, I'd eyes like, come on. Bring it now. Who's winning this race, mister? And I saw he'd sit in his car. He'd sit in his car, and he'd go. He'd give me one of these. I thought, just bring it on, buddy. Bring it on. Who's got the power now, huh? Pass that stop sign and be about a grand. Oh, my God. So we end up taking my husband to the emergency room. I call our doctor. I said, he's not getting an appointment. I'm getting worried about him. And this bus is killing me. And it's hot as hell and loud. And don't send your kids on the bus if they're going to throw up, for God's sakes. Oh, my God, I could tell you 100 bus stories make you wet your pants. You know, I won't even mention about how I shot the valve stems off the back end of the bus one day. But that's... So, I get Joe in the car, and the doctor says, just take him to the emergency room. Just tell him, you know, tell him that you think there's something going on in his brain. They'll give him a CAT scan. They'll ask him to, you know, verify a few things and blah, blah, blah. So we're driving down there. And now remember, I love the line in the book. And this line, I think, sometimes gets a lot of people mixed up. This line it says, if only his arrangements would stay put. If only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. See, that's Katie-topia. See, everybody has to do... I sent out the memo this morning. Did y'all get it? Come on. I know what's best for everybody. I got all the answers. And what the problem is, so I tell Joe, I said, listen, when we get in that emergency room, they're going to tell you to touch your nose. I want you to touch your elbow. I mean, we ain't leaving here till we get a CAT scan. And I said, when they say touch your knee, you touch your head. And my husband, God love him, he's like, okay, I'm on it, I'm on it, I'm on it, I'm on it. No worries. You know, and I'm like, and I am just stark raving sober. So we get in there and the doctor goes, oh, he's such a smart aleck. He goes, so you think he's got something wrong with his head, huh? It's like, yes, I do, mister. So just, you know, do what you need to do, but let's get that CAT scan. And so he goes, well, let's see. He goes, Joe, I need you to touch your nose. And I swear Joe does this. He goes, I'm like, oh, my God. What are you doing? Touch your elbow. So I thought, okay, plan B, right? Because you guys know, Plan B is when the doctor leaves, I'm gonna find a white jacket, I'm going to put Joe on a gurney, and I'm going to walk down there and say, Dr. Gordon here, he needs a CAT scan, just shove him in the tube. Just do it. And I'm the kind of person who, I swear to God, I could go, if you want me and Obama's picture together, give me about a month. I can infiltrate anything you need. I am terrible. It works against me. Trust me. Self-will and me go hand in hand with getting what I need. That's why when you tell me to surrender my will, I'm thinking, God is going to jip me. I know he is. I can get so much more if you just leave it to me. And so finally the doctor starts doing the 2+2 and all of this stuff. And Joe fails that test. And he says, I'm going to go ahead and get you a CAT scan. And so he does a CAT scan, and the doctor comes in back in, and he goes, my God, and he puts his hand on my shoulder. I'll never forget this. And he says, he got a massive tumor in his brain. And my very first thought was, God Almighty, I'm going to drive this school bus forever. See, that's the level of self-centeredness I'm awakened to. See, and that's what I'm saying, guys, is you got it too. You suffer from alcoholism. My first thought will always be me if you hurt or threaten me. I don't care how spiritual I am. You scare me. What about me? How's this going to affect me? What about me? That's why working with others is so important when tragedy hits. So important. It's the only thing that works when everything else fails. Now, I didn't say anything to my husband. I didn't say, oh, my God, honey, I can't believe I'm going to drive that stupid-ass bus forever. You know, I laid on his chest and bawled. I'm scared to death. I think we're getting ready to lose my husband. What ends up happening is the greatest thing in the world happened. The greatest thing in the world. The tumor was benign. They didn't think it was. They thought it was lymphoma. It was gigantic. But he had massive brain damage. And he wasn't physically damaged, which was very fortunate, but he had massive brain damage. And I love my husband dearly. I was in it for the long haul. I'm not bailing on him. But what I didn't see happening was, see, remember those bedevilments I told you we're in? Remember when you're in a position where this is a good code if you're wondering if you're in untreated alcoholism. If you don't know what's on page 60 to 63, if you hadn't read your big book, if you're walking around with a sponsor and not using them, or no sponsor at all, be very, very careful, because the malady is on you and you don't know it, the bedevilments. And what ends up happening is you need medication, and that medication triggers the allergy. You don't get to stop it. And once that allergy is triggered, the obsession begins. And one pill is not enough. And you need 10. And you can't figure it out. Now, you're not drinking yet. No, you will be. And that's how it happens. It happens with dental work a lot. You get a root canal, for God's sake, something pretty benign. And all of a sudden the doctor says, you need a little Vicodin. You go, yes, I do. Thank God somebody sees I need some Vicodin. And you trigger that allergy unbeknownst to you if you're in the malady. If you're spiritually fit, God makes that work as medicine. That's how that deal works. You take it and you don't even feel good. But you got the malady on you, you feel good. And what ends up happening there is you're scheduling more dental work. I might have a root canal over on this side I need done. Right? And that's how the deal works. Well, unfortunately, my husband got some medication. And it triggered his allergy. And within 3 years, or actually within 18 months, he died of a heroin overdose. 23 years sober. Yeah. I take alcoholism very seriously. You know, and here's the sad thing. I'd live the rest of my life with this man with brain damage. Because I was in it for the long haul. I did not see that sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was not treatment for alcoholism. So when I talk about this, I am here to shake your world up. I don't know why God brought you here and me here at the same time. I don't know who it is that needs to hear this. If it's not you, then fine. But it could be the person sitting next to you. And what's so sad, guys, you almost lost me too. And I didn't have a physical ailment. By the time all this was said and done, I said, screw it. I'm out of here, man. I'm not playing this game no more. Joe'd been gone for 18 months. Thank God I had Charlie. Charlie was my best friend for 20 years. I mean, there was no sexual energy, trust me. We were best friends. I didn't play that game. I'm the girl in AA that's got the integrity, that's got the dignity. We're not going to tell bad jokes. You know what I mean? I'm keeping you boys to where it needs to be. I'm a woman of respect. And Charlie had never had a girlfriend like that, a girl that was a friend. And so we really, really played this really cool game as like brother and sister. And Charlie knew I was not doing well, and he wasn't doing well either. Hell, he was in untreated alcoholism. I remember I told him, the monkey's on my back. And he said, well, don't drink without me. And I thought, oh, boy, that's really helpful. But believe it or not, it really was, you know? Because, you know, it's like we say, I wasn't going to drink. I was going to kill myself. I wasn't going to drink. I was in so much pain. So I called this girl to be my sponsor. And I said to her, I said, well, first of all, I got a girl with 1 year in the program. Oh, she was on fire. And I remember thinking, oh, my God. Now, I could hear solution. See, I'd been around AA. I had a foundation. I could hear solution. So I took this little girl outside. I said, I want you to be my sponsor. She said, oh, my God, you got like 15 years. And I said, what is this hair doing up here? It's making me crazy. So I said, I know, but man, you got what I want. So she takes me out to the parking lot, and she just comes at me like a fire hose. She said, there's no God in your life. You're so driven by self-will, blah, 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 blah. I remember sitting there. I was smoking at the time because I did start smoking again. I thought, it's a bad idea. A bad idea. This chick is a little too much for me. And once again, there was another life raft I didn't get in. That little girl could have saved my life at that point, but I did not get in it. And so what ended up happening, now fast forward, I get this one girl and I call her, and she's got about, 5-6 years less than me. And she says, I tell her everything. Joe's been gone 18 months. I'm sitting in the dark, man. I'm in a dark room, dark place, dark, 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 dark. And I said, Marty, I need help. And she said, you know what? I told her the whole story she knew about Joe and I. She said, listen, I want you to, you got your big book? I thought, nah, I think I know where it is. She said, I want you to read page 60 to 63. And I thought, well, that must be the part of the book that says some of us have it worse than others. And that some of us tragedies are harder to accept than others. And I, sure, 60 to 63, that's what you told me to read? Yeah, okay. So I flip over, and page 62 is the page it fell on. I read selfishness and self-centeredness that we think is the root of our trouble. I'm not a big fan of cussing, but I said, but did that bitch not hear a word I said? Oh, my God. And I thought, what? So I call her back, and she said, Katie, I'm sorry, but there's a fine line between sorrow and self-pity, and you've stepped across it, and you're in self-pity. And nobody can help you out of it but God. And so I'm telling you what, this girl rocketed me into the fourth dimension. Charlie drug my butt around. He saved my life. He drug my butt around to big book studies. Guess who we fall into? Mark Houston, of all people. I swear to God, the first, we end up at a Mark Houston weekend. Charlie says, let's go to a big book study. I'm like, yuck, oh, a big book weekend? Can't we like go to the Caribbean or something? Wouldn't that be more fun? And he goes, no, let's go to this big book weekend and stay in these bunks. I'm like, a bunk? Oh, and I swear to God, I'll never forget this. Mark is sitting there and he's doing his thing and he's reading out of the big book. And we look at each other and go, what book is he reading out of? Oh my God, I've never heard this stuff. Now remember, I told you, we were 3 years. I mean, I was running conferences. I was all about AA. You can walk away from AA to where you don't even know what nothing is in that book. I am here to tell you. And so what ended up happening is Marty taught me something that I was unaware of, and it's the second surrender. It is the being rocketed into the fourth dimension. The second surrender in this program is to the third step. It is, when it says what is the how and why of it in this willing, you know, turning our will and our life over to the care of God, I'm telling you guys, I don't think we wake up till almost 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years to that. I don't get what self-will is. It warns me in there so many times that I will become a victim of the delusion that I can rest, satisfaction, and happiness if I just manage well. A victim means I'm tricked or duped by my own thinking. My own thinking always packages it up nice. Bob Bazan says it beautifully. He says it's still a turd in a foil package. You're just packaging it a little bit better. And so what I got to realize is that this level of self-centeredness, this filter I'm missing is in my DNA. It is in my DNA. You hurt or threaten me sober, and the first thought I have is of me. And I don't know that. As a matter of fact, I love in the book where it says, a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. See, I'll hold the door for you, but you better say thank you. See, I'll show you a ton of action that's kind, but only God is the one who can make my heart have compassion. And I know the difference. I know when I'm phony baloney. I know when I'm just saying it. And that's what ends up happening, especially in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this one where it says, we don't shoot our wounded. We pray they don't shoot themselves. And what I can do in AA, oh, I can blow you up. Oh, don't get me wrong. I can do me some gossip. I am not proud of that. I can just start picking people off. Big head Doug. Bow. Itchy, scratchy Karen. Oh, my God. I mean, how many of y'all sit in an AA meeting, they raise their hand, they go, oh. There goes the meeting, right? There goes the meeting. But I love it. It says, our troubles are of our own making, right? And it says, our troubles are of our own making. That is a promise. So in order for me to be free, it's got to be about me. See, I have no luck in getting you people to act right. You never have acted right for me. But for me, my troubles are of my own making. I got an eye on the time too, Terry. We doing, got about 5 more minutes, 10 more minutes. Okay, I'm wrapping it up. So I love these lines, guys. It says, a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I am a producer of confusion rather than harmony. See, now I got harmony on my mind. As a matter of fact, if I'm doing something for the good, I absolutely cannot see that I have a motive till you don't do what I think you should do for me. See, now I can do it with self-righteous. Oh yeah, I know how to work a room, right? I know how to get what I want. See, I know when I'm being deceitful or dishonest. But when I'm being kind, I absolutely cannot see that I have a motive. I have a really cool story, and I'll wrap this up. My son is getting ready to have a baby, and he's young. He's going to be 22. He was my train wreck, and I'm so proud of him. He's really turned his life around, and the verdict's still out if he's one of us. I hope like hell he's not one of us personally. But if he is, you know, I'm all with Don. Man, this is about our children's children's children. I'm all about that. I'll be the first one standing up, pulling somebody aside and saying they're breaking tradition. I got no problem with that. And so my son wanted to, I said, you know what, Charlie and I are going to help you buy a house. You know, a bunch of foreclosures right now, good time to pick up a house for the kids if we can. And so what we were going to do is we were going to put about $20,000 down as a gift for these kids. They're getting ready to have a baby. They got married. They've been together 5 years, blah, blah, blah. And I realized that they need a little nicer house than what they're looking for. Don't you think that's a good idea? It's the children. They need a little bit nicer house. So we start looking for a little bit nicer house. They're just following me like little ducklings. You know, they're just the kids. And so we go from what looks to be an $85,000 house to a $95,000 house. Well, by the time I'm done, I'm at a $130,000 house. Now I'm happy. That's good. That's good. I'm thinking Charlie just needs to help me here. It's all good. Now I know I'm pushing him and I'm being a little dishonest with my husband, but who isn't? Come on. Come on. Right? He may be the head, but I'm the neck. We all know that. So, okay. So, we sit down, and we are literally getting ready to sign on the dotted line. My little daughter-in-law is gigantic, ready to blow that baby out any minute. They are getting eager to get into this house. And my son says, Mom, how much is that house payment going to be? And I show him, it's going to be like about $1,100. And he looks at me and goes, I can't afford $1,100. And his wife starts crying. And there's mayhem in the house. And all of a sudden I see that I am a producer of confusion rather than harmony. See, I wanted them to have a more expensive house. And I said, Sam, I'll help you. Don't worry. I'll help you pay the monthly payments. She goes, I don't want your help, Mom. I want to be independent. I'm getting ready to be a dad. He starts to cry. He's pointing his finger at me. See, I just was trying to be helpful. I didn't see what I'd done. God darn it, guys. I just walked away going, oh, my God. I called my sponsor. She said, it's a bitch, isn't it, Katie? I said, God almighty. I didn't even know I had a motive. I didn't realize what I was doing. Now I got everybody in the house crying. And I just looked at Charlie and I thought, just buy it for him. Just buy the whole house for him. Fix it. Fix it. Throw money at it. Fix it. Fix it. Well, that wasn't going to work either. And so come back. We ended up. And I called him the next day because I was so sick about this. See, I'm in complete self-pity. I'm sick about it. And I said, Sam, how are you doing? He goes, you know, we're actually doing good, Mom. He said, we're relieved. We're relieved this whole house thing is off of us now. See, it's still about me. Well, I'll tell you guys, that's what I'm talking about. I work a solid program. I damn sure do. The best of my ability. And I fall short frequently. Frequently. I sponsor a lot of women. Thank God I do, because they are the only ones who get me out of that self-pity. Self-pity is like glue on your arm. You try to clean it off with a Kleenex. It's ugly. It's a mess. And the only thing that works when you're in self-pity is working with another drunk. Promise you. Promise you. Promise you. If you don't have sponsees, it's too bad. Because you darn sure need to have them. There's no reason. It's a duty you have. It's a duty and a privilege. Damn it. Okay, so, God almighty, I swear my sponsees, I got them sponsoring in 90 days. 90 days, there's no screwing around, man. You're going to be sponsoring, period. Because you got a message to carry. This nonsense of, the, you know, waiting a year. So, it says in the third step, guys, and Terry, I got an eye too on this, so I don't want you to panic back there. I got to tell you something, though. I had no depth, no weight in my message to carry to the drunk. Be very careful. If you do not have a message of depth and weight, get one. Get one. How do you get one? You go back there to Terry's desk and you pick up a big book study. And you plug that thing in like you're learning French. Like you're getting ready to go to France in a month. And you better know the language, because we're dropping you off in the middle of it where nobody speaks English. And you plug those CDs in and you get working with somebody. This is not pussyfooting around. This isn't wait a year. This is learn the doggone book and do with a book. Right? You know, people complain about people who spout the book but don't do it. I haven't had the experience of meeting many of them. I've had a lot of experience meeting people who don't do the book and don't know anything about the book. But I haven't had the other one. In the third step, the terms, it says, He provided what we needed if I stay close to Him and perform His work well. Stay close to Him means I must do 4 through 9. Not 4 and 5 and sit on 6 and 7. There is no sitting. It's like a golf swing, guys. There is no sitting. Action, action, more action, period. Your life depends on it. You want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension? Do the work. Continue to do the work. It says for me, too, to stay in the tenth step. The tenth step is the most overlooked step in the whole wide world. The tenth step is not to be sit and looked at and call your sponsor once a month. It is to watch for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. And when these crop up, because they will every day, what are we to do? Ask God to remove them. Replace them with something because of spiritual principle. Yes, and spiritual law says replace anything that is removed. Replace it with something good. Talk to somebody immediately. If I've stepped on somebody's toes, make an amends. And then I turn my thoughts to someone. It's a matter of just recentering self-will to God's will constantly. And the fourth step, remember, is an evaluation. It's a consideration of how self manifests. And then we go through 6 and 7 merely as asking God. It's just saying, I'm ready. We're all ready. Oh, Terry's back there like, don't you run over. I will kick your butt. And then the 11th step, remember, prayer and meditation is not the only part of the 11th step. It's the evening review. I got to check my work. If all I do is go to bed and thank God for keeping me sober, I did not check my work. And the evening review is in the 11th step. So between 10 and 11, there's three things I got to do. And the 12th step, remember, is working with others. It says, remember, that if we all actually took all 12 steps, what would our life look like? If everybody sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was bringing solution to every meeting, what would our lives look like? We actually did take inventory. We did do an appraisal. We did go ask somebody for help. We did work with others. See, guys, I'm a big fan of this big book. It opened up a life for me that I did not know was available. I understand what rocketed into the fourth dimension does look like today. It's a life that I had no idea. God has got a palace for me, and I was living right outside the ghetto. I had lived in the ghetto drinking, and I just moved a few feet out from it. And now today I understand what that palace looks like. I'm very grateful that you all listened to my story. Thank you.
Those who would like, let's join in the fellowship circle for the Lord's Prayer.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day